Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Joshua Armstrong, 15 years of career experience, a backstep firefighter for a new Braunfels Fire Department in Texas. When I invited Joshua to come on, his response was, "Why me? I'm just a nobody from nowhere." But when you hear Joshua's story, and most importantly, his why, the invite to come on will make sense. The conversation had was genuine and flat out awesome. It's so easy to let getting better at this job sometimes distract our attention from what matters the most. What we need to keep in mind is finding the right balance between what we love and who we love. With that, I present Mr. Joshua Armstrong.
Hello, my name is Joshua Armstrong. Currently residing in Braunfels, Texas, born and raised in California. To get into it, the way I came about the fire service is a little different than most people. I actually joined the United States Air Force back in 2010, and one of the jobs that were available to me was fire protection. And young, just turned 19-year-old, didn't really know what that was. Asked the Air Force recruiter, what is this fire protection? And he basically told me, "You're an aircraft rescue firefighter." And so to me, I was like, "Okay, so can you tell me a little more about it?" And he's like, "Basically, you respond as a regular firefighter on the military base." And as soon as I got home, I just started researching everything about it. Growing up, I didn't have anyone in the fire service around me. Didn't grow up around it. I had a couple uncles, joined the military, but fire service was completely new. So from there, I just started researching, hit the ground running. And as soon as I finished boot camp, got sent to our technical school, which is in Goodfellow in San Angelo. And man, I thought growing up, I'm not the smartest guy. I had a lot of trouble through high school of learning things. Things didn't come easy to me. And so I thought, okay, firefighting will be pretty simple. Pretty straightforward. Water, you put water on the fire. How hard can this be? And man, was I in for a rude awakening going through tech school. And it was difficult, but man, I'm so grateful I passed it. And every single day that I get to do this job now, going on 15 years, I think about that all the time of being a young kid that, wasn't meant to be here right now. So I'm grateful every day for it.
Definitely, man. I didn't know you were originally from California. And so I'm going to, how long were you there for before you decided to move?
So, like I said, I was born in Sun City, raised, my whole life in California. I joined the Air Force at 19. What was funny was when I joined the Air Force, they began to give you kind of like, "Hey, here are some bases where your job is at. You could go and get stationed there." And they sent me right back to California. So my first base was at Vandenberg Air Force Base in Santa Barbara County, California. So I was there for 4 years. And shortly after that, I went overseas to Belgium for 4 years. And my last year in the military, they sent me back to California in Sacramento. So the whole time I was trying to get to like Texas or somewhere, because that's where Lackland Air Force Base is. And it's just, people here are a lot different in Texas. So now, getting out of the military and residing in Texas, me and my wife don't really tell a lot of people we're from California, because you kind of get a look from other people. And but it's funny, because when I applied for the department I'm currently at right now, I went in for the job interview, and the first thing I said was, my name, and I said, "I'm from California, so please don't hate me." So it kind of broke the ice and made everyone laugh.
All right. Did you ever look at applying, or did you ever look at, departments in California, or were you just trying to get out of there?
So my original thought was, I'm going to join the Air Force. And then when I saw that I could be a firefighter, cool, I'm going to do 4 years, get out, and then start pursuing the job on the outside. the base where I was at, they offered me a spot to say, hey, when you do your 4 years, you can get out and we'll hire you as a DoD civilian. Fortunately, during that time, that's when the government had the whole furlough and there was no jobs that they were hiring for. And everything on the city side, they were looking for medics. And at that point in time, I was pretty scared of going through medic school and worrying about failing. And I had the opportunity. They gave me orders to Belgium for 4 years, and I had just got engaged to my wife. And my fire chief at the time was like, hey, we'll hold a spot for you. Hopefully, when this furlough stuff ends, go explore, go, use the Air Force as much as they're going to use you, go travel Europe. And then when you come back, I'll have a job for you. So that's kind of where it went about. And he owned up to that. As soon as I got out of the military in 2019, he was, by his word, he offered me a job and I got picked up and I was there for 2.5 years. And during that time, I was, happy to be, in California on the military base, but I was still looking for more calls of pursuing city. Just being on the military base, you don't get as many calls. You get a lot of training, a lot of money gets funneled in, so you get a lot of opportunities, but you're not getting the call volume. Unfortunately, that on the job experience, you don't really get it. I was in California, so we had a lot of wildland fires, and I have buddies right now, obviously with the fires going on in LA right now. Some of the guys I was with are currently out there fighting them, so shout out to them, and I pray that they're safe. But I got to do a lot of that. But as for like medical, structure fires, anything like that, we would go, weeks and months without really getting a call. And that's kind of crazy to think about. So.
Because the way I understand it from other guys that I've had interviewed that, started on military bases, the rules are so much stricter than like where, like for instance, my jurisdiction, the county I live in, the county on the or the rules on the bases as far as building construction is a lot more strict. And so
Correct.
you don't get those type of calls. So I totally get that.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have to think about it too. A majority of people on military installations are young, healthy adults or physically active. They're not going to have all these, long medical histories like a lot of people in the city do. A geriatric population is, really not there. You have some retirees on base, but not really. And people follow the rules. There ain't really doing anything illegal. There's not any really drugs going on. So you don't have to worry about that. We did have a mutual aid with the city that was right next to us. So that's kind of the only time you will actually get a call. But, by the time you respond off base and go and help them, the fire's out or you're just kind of doing salvage and overhaul. And like I said, with the wildland fires, we got a lot of experience with that. But, that I would say that's pretty much it.
All right. So, how did you come about finding the current department that you're on now?
So when I got out, I was, a DoD civilian at Vandenberg Air Force Base. And fortunately, the past couple of years with COVID and everything, the state of California, the way it was, with politics and just the cost of living and everything about it, the time we're in, drugs were starting to get a little more rampant, gang violence. And I talked to my wife and I was like, this isn't really where I want our kids to be raised. I have a 9-year-old son and, a 5-year-old daughter. And we started talking, and I was stationed with a buddy of mine in Belgium, and he's from San Antonio. He currently works for San Antonio Fire Department. He got out of the military, and I always wanted to go to Texas. And just the people here are a lot different. It's the Southern hospitality, and just there's just something about it. When I went through boot camp and tech school in Texas, that I was like, man, I feel like Texas is where we should go and where we should be. And so I called him and asked him, like, hey, we're looking at moving to Texas. Where do you recommend? And he was like, New Braunfels, Texas. Nowhere else. Don't look anywhere else. This is where the city I recommend. And we started doing some research, and it was like one of the fastest growing cities. Everyone was moving here. In the past, I would say 5 years, the population in the city has doubled. It's been crazy. I've been in Texas now for going on 4 years, and there's buildings going up everywhere in this town. It's crazy to see in just my little time, let alone how small it was prior. So, long story short, I did a lateral transfer to JBSA, which is Joint Base San Antonio, the military installation over here. I was only there for 3.5 months, and I'm 30 years old, and talked to my wife, and she was like, "Well, are you happy where you're at?" I'm like, "Honestly, no. Being on the base, we're doing 24 on, 24 off. I'm not getting any calls. You get some in-flight emergencies here and there, but I felt like I was just wasting my time. I wanted to go out and help people. I wanted to do my job." And she was like, "Well, why don't you look at the local city departments?" And thankfully, the state of Texas recognizes all the DoD certifications. And so I just had to pay a fee, got everything transferred, and Live Oak was, right there, right next to me. And I applied, and within 2 weeks, I got picked up. And, thank God for Kevin Pfluger. He was the first one I talked to, and he was like, "Hey, come on over." And it was a quick process. And I was there for a year and a half. And man, I love my time there. I love the guys there. I know you've met quite a few of them. They're hard hitters. And man, it was a great transition of going from DoD to that department because I finally felt like I was at home. I was with some hard chargers of guys that wanted to do hard work, wanted to train, wanted to help people, wanted to live the oath and that mission. And I was like, okay, like this is outstanding. A little time later, I was talking to one of the captains there, Robert Johnson, who just recently retired. And he told me, he's like, "You need to look at a bigger department." He's like, "We're just a one station department. If you want to promote, you wanted more opportunities." He goes, "I see you going to a bigger department." He goes, "I have friends at New Braunfels, and I think you need to look at them." And what was funny was New Braunfels has a swim test. And I told, my captain, I was like, "I can't swim, Cap." I didn't know how to swim at all. I had a near drowning experience as a kid, so I didn't go anywhere near water. And his answer to me was, "Well, get in the fucking pool and start learning." So he was honest and straight up with it. And honestly, it was what I needed to do that push. And I luckily enough, applied, passed all the tests, and barely passed the swim test. And I've been here in the 26th of this month. I'll be here 2 years. So yeah, I've kind of bounced around quite a bit.
No, I mean, yeah, and that's fine because you got to end up finding a place that, and that's one of the messages I always like to give out to the listeners. You have to find the department that works for you. You know what I mean? It's got to work for you and you alone and for you to understand it. So I'm with that 100%. So for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about your department, the size, how many stations? I didn't want to say the name because I feel like I'm going to butcher it, but I'm going to try. It's New Braunfels.
Yeah, New Braunfels.
New Braunfels. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So can you tell
Yeah,
us a little bit
a
about
lot of people butcher the name.
it?
No worries. There's a lot of history with this department. I didn't really realize it until I got with them. It was established in 1845. It's one of the oldest fire departments here in the state of Texas. One of the first departments to start doing medical too. We have seven stations. We cover 47 square miles of the city, and we cover some ESDs. So we go out and help out with them. Seven stations, two ladder trucks. Every station has an ambulance, and five of the stations have an engine. So we don't have a heavy house right now, just because one's currently under construction, but we definitely do have plans on expanding because our population has, like I said, grown so much. It's at 160,000 right now, and it's just growing even bigger. So they've been talked to building, three more fire stations just to try to keep up. So minimum manning is 40 on shift, two always on the ambulance, three on the engine, and three on the truck. So
Okay. And you're all EMT basics and paramedics, or is it like paramedic only?
So right now, we are EMT and medics, but the goal is to have everyone as medics.
Gotcha.
So right now we're at like 69% medics, but the goal of the department is to get everyone through medic school. So when you do get hired here, you do have to sign a paper and agreement saying you will go through medic school at a certain point in time. So
Okay. And as far as the rotation, how does it work between riding the box and riding a specific apparatus?
we do a 48-hour shift. So we do the 48-96. So the first 24, you're either on the box or engine, and then the other day you're going to be, vice versa. So you trade off. So one day you're on the engine and one day you're on the box, and it'll switch, if you're there the first day or the second day. They try to really limit having someone be on the box for 48 straight hours just due to the call volume, because statistically, if you're running all night, you're not going to be good as well the next day. And obviously we want to provide the best service to, people of the city. So having everyone on their A game, and it makes everyone maintain their skills as well. The engineer on the engine isn't just, okay, I'm just driving the truck and, not worrying about his medical skills. He has to still be on top of that.
Do they make engineers SWAT too, or just the
Correct.
firefighters? Oh, they
No, the
do.
engineers. So
Oh,
the only one
okay.
that doesn't have to ride the box anymore is the rank of lieutenant and above. But the engineers do SWAT. So every box has an engineer, and he's that one has to be a medic. So it's either the engineer is a medic, and then you'd be riding with basic like myself.
Okay. Understood. Understood. And are you guys allowed to, is it with when you're on the box, is it strictly EMS calls only, or if a fire call comes in, can you guys operate as firefighters even though you're riding the box?
We operate as firefighters. We don't do kind of like the San Antonio method where, like, if you're on the box, you get your bunker gear taken away. No, we have it with us. So the first due medic on, if we get a structural fire, he's jumping in on the hand line in their search. So yeah, car fires or whatever, if we get on scene first, we're bunking out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the
Okay.
box is a lot quicker than the engine. So as soon as we get that dispatch, if the box gets there first, they're doing scene size up, and then they're bunking out immediately, and they're getting ready to either, force the door, do a 360, or jump on that hose line, help deploy it once the engine gets there or the truck.
Okay. I like that because it's even though you're still a medic or a firefighter riding the medic unit, you're still a fire. You know what I mean? Like fire is still first, which is awesome.
100%. Yeah, and that was one of the biggest things coming to this department that I'm grateful that they do. It's definitely a big task for a lot of the medics and the engineers, because you're wearing both hats at any given moment. Like, you got
Right.
to be prepared, and even if we get any sort of rescue, you're jumping in on rescue even though you're on the box. So
Okay. No, I really do like that because, like you said, even the whole thing with the engineer also switching over to the because you know as well as I do that your skills are perishable. If you don't use it, you lose it. So the fact that they make them swap is keeping that balance of EMS and fire skills together. So I love the way that they do that.
yeah, a lot of the guys that have been here for a long time, they didn't always do that. Once they changed that about, let's say, 4 years ago, they made the engineers, go and start being back on the box again. So a lot of them had to relearn their skills and be proficient again, and it was difficult, and a lot of guys didn't like that because, once you make that rank to engineer, it's like,
Right.
oh, I'm only going to be on the engine. And the chiefs are like, no, you're getting paid as a paramedic, so guess what? You still got to maintain your skills. And it was difficult for a lot of guys. There are some guys that have embraced it, and some guys that have definitely fought against it.
Right.
So, but as of right now, everyone coming in, this is the norm. So we shouldn't have that issue. It's, hey, this is what's going to be expected. This is the standard. You have to know your craft. You
I
have to know your
love
skills. So.
it, man. I mean, you said the word right there, standards. I think every department should have them and should adhere to it. So that's and not everybody's gonna agree with me, and that's fine. But for those that know, if you sign up to go to New Braunfels, it's like, hey, you're going to be a medic. Like, we clearly have outlined it. You're signing the dotted line. It's not like they bait you in and then go surprise. Like, it's
Exactly.
we they tell you. So
Yeah. They from right from the beginning, when I came over here and I did the testing, we give everyone the opportunity for the physical portion just to come in and try it out to see, where you're at and where you stand, and just to kind of network. And everyone tells you, hey, you better realize we do a lot of medical here, like the fire service in general, we 90% of our calls is medical. So, we don't get, first, all those burners all the time. We're not big cities like Detroit or Chicago or, I mean, so it's, they make sure everyone understands that. And
Okay.
to me, at the end of the day, I serve to help people. I, if it's a fire or if it's helping, grandma up from the ground, whatever it is, it doesn't matter to me. I don't mind riding the box. Maybe I'm a little naive because I'm not a medic yet. I don't have as much pressure as, a medic does in those decisions. But man, I love running those calls and helping whoever it is. It doesn't matter. That's what I signed up for. That's what I get paid to do. So.
Awesome, man. I love the mindset already. That's why, you always ask, man, why me? Right there. Right there's the damn reason right there, Josh.
I appreciate that.
So if a first due structural box comes in, what is New Braunfels' first alarm assignment? I'm gonna get that right eventually.
You're good. It's going to be coming with three engines, two trucks, and two medic units. You have your medical officer that drives around, and then our battalion. So.
Okay. All right. And then I'm assuming if it's more, if they need more, they'll just, either strike a second and you get the rest of the rest of the stations if it's in your jurisdiction.
Correct. And we also have mutual aid agreements. So we have San Marcos right next to us. We have Schertz, we have Cibolo. So we will call, additional from, our brethren cities. So
Okay.
if something does get something massive like that, like a large apartment or whatnot. So.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Awesome. What is your definition of professionalism?
It's maintaining those standards. It's not just maintaining, but exceeding those standards. For me, when I first joined the military, when I got my uniform, my drill instructor, he let everyone know, hey, when you put this on, you don't represent yourself anymore. You represent the United States or United States Air Force as a whole. And man, I've carried that with me, now with, the fire service, and every day, like, am I earning my badge? Am I doing everything I can to better provide the best service to, the community, to my brothers and sisters, to my family at home? And, every time I go out there, the city and people, they have an expectation of, who's coming and who's going to be there to service them. And if you're just coming in and just collecting a paycheck and just, going with the motions, not really caring, that's not, to me, that's not being a professional. A professional is someone that's going to try to do the best they can in every aspect to provide the best quality service. Some people might see it just as an appearance thing, but I see it as just, how you conduct yourself, your personality, how you work with others, how you carry yourself, the things you do on and off duty, and your fitness, all those things. Are you maintaining your skills? Are you working on your craft? I mean, all that ties in with being a professional. You're
Right.
getting paid to do, one of the best jobs in the world. So, and act like it.
Right. No, for sure. For sure. Okay. So once you took that captain's advice, who told you about New Braunfels, and you walked into that station, was it, and you walked into that organization, I should say, really, was it everything you thought it would be?
At first, it was a little different. Going in at 32, starting all over again as a rookie, it was being my third time, and kind of certain guys playing that rookie game, And certain guys not being, like what I thought, just because coming from Live Oak, working with Kevin Pflugger, Michael Wataki, Hank Struble, like all those guys, it was just a different vibe because we're all young and hungry compared to here at New Braunfels. There's been the guys that have been here for, almost 30 years. We just had a guy retire that had 41 years. So a lot of guys have been here for a long time. So it was just a little different at first, and also the medical aspect of it. Live Oak was just first responder, and we worked with Schertz EMS. Here it's like, oh, now you really have to know your medical skills and being on top of it. Like, to me, I was like, oh man, this is a lot. Like, can I do this and start all over again? But after that initial just couple of months, I started finding my groove and finding my guys and my crew, and man, I love it every day now. So, but it was, I think it's common with any sort of change, moving from one organization to another. You're always going to have those doubts of, man, did I make the right decision? Man, these are all these new guys that have all this experience together, and you're the odd man coming in, right? And you just got to put in hard work and show them that you want to be part of the team and you want to do your best. And then, that time and those relationships come. You're not immediately going to have it. So,
Right. I love it. Okay. I mean, because there's I'm sure a lot of individuals out there look at maybe wherever they're currently at, they may not be happy. And it's always that question. You always hear the grass isn't always greener, but at some point, man, if the organization's not fitting, meeting your needs, you gotta jump in with both feet. And you did it. And you did say, I love how honesty, humility. You said it was nervous at first, but once you found that groove and you found those right individuals, everything was set.
100%. Like I said, it's not good to, walking into it, you're gonna have to prove yourself. These guys don't know you, and you just kind of have to play that game of like, all right, let me be the first one up making coffee. Let me go there and clean the rig. Let me do everything I need to do. Let me mop, and it's just you have to show the initiative. And like I said, being 32, I'm kind of like, oh, I have to start all over and do this. But at the end of the day, it's tradition, right? You have to pay your respects for the guys that have done it before, and it's just earning your keep. So I don't see it as a bad thing. So.
Definitely. Okay. I want to hit on physical fitness because that's one of the things that was like attracted me when I stumbled upon your page and I'm like, all right, this dude's getting it in. He's getting in like hard and heavy, especially with the gear workouts. And it kind of goes together because you're wearing a shirt that says never satisfied on there. So how important, well, yeah, I'm going to ask how important is physical fitness? But first and foremost, why did you decide, like, I'm going to hit the ground running and work out like this? Why?
So growing up, physical fitness was not a thing. I was a really heavy set kid growing up. I didn't play sports, not physically active by any means. And what was sad, when I went to go join the military, they call, when to call and get information, they always ask you your height and your weight. And I told them, 5'9", and I weigh 265. And the recruiter laughed at me and says, you're way over our weight limit. You can't come into the Air Force. You don't meet the requirements. Don't call again. And she hung up on me.
Wow.
And yeah, and something inside me just lit a fire, and I was like, you know what? I need to start figuring this stuff out. And within a year, I lost all that weight, and I dropped down. The maximum weight limit for joining the Air Force was 186. So I went from, 265 to 186. And I called that recruiter back, and I was like, hey, I met the weight, like I want to join. And she's like, okay, cool, let me send you MEPS, and if you go over your maximum weight by 1 pound, because I know, who it's an issue for, you're getting kicked out of this process. And so every month, she weighed me, because when I got selected, or when I selected fire protection, it's a pretty rare job to get in the Air Force. So I was in this delayed entry program for 11 months waiting to get sent off to boot camp because this job wasn't really available. And she knew I was a heavyset kid trying to join. And every month she would weigh me twice a month. And like I said, she said, if you went over by 1 pound, you're out of this program. You know, don't come back again. And I ended up weighing in at 168 when I went straight to boot camp. And I didn't do things the right way. I was just like starving myself, just trying to run around and just, you know, a lot of body weight stuff. And once I got into it, I started getting, you know, more physically fit, started learning things at my first duty location. Did a lot of wild land. I joined a hotshot crew when I was in the military because our base had one. So I was doing a lot of hiking. And once I got orders to Belgium, you know, I met my now wife and we had our first son. And I went from being really physically active to being at a desk job because the location where we're at, you're an Air Force flatline, you know, fire department on the Army base, and the only calls you would get is if there was any in-flight emergencies, but we barely had any flying. So for 4 years I was there, we had zero in-flight emergencies, so zero calls, and a lot of the stuff we had to do was just administrative type stuff. So I was stagnant, started eating, and I went up to 275 in the military and was looking at possibly getting kicked out because I gained so much weight. And it was kind of like a wake-up call, like, man, like, I need to start getting things right. And in the process of transitioning out of the military, I started losing weight again, kind of doing the same things, not eating, running, not doing things right. And, you know, my weight has always been an issue growing up. So I've always gone up and down, up and down. And only recently in these past few years, I've really tried to dial in and do things right. And when I got to Live Oak, I attended Basil's one bad day and met a lot of smoke divers. And to me, that's kind of what opened that door, like, you know, meeting those guys and finding out what this is about and other guys training in gear. That's when I kind of started looking and pursuing it. And this past year, I've been training nonstop in gear. I actually am next in line to go to Oklahoma Smoke Divers class number 5 here in February. So this past year I've been getting ready to do that. And man, and it's, to me, the gear training is not so much the physical aspect, but the mental aspect of it that I've have found out. It's just mentally hard. It's your body's screaming at you, your body just hurts. It sucks. Texas, it's hot and humid. And I was out when it was 106 index, putting on full gear and basically killing myself. But it was the mental reward that I was getting and persevering through that. I was like, there's something about this. It's not just the physical aspect of it, it's the mental side of it, of how far I could keep pushing and keep working. And to me, I started falling in love with it. And that's really what got me to, you know, I feel like I've done more gear workouts than not gear workouts in 2024. And now I've been adding a lot more running. So I'll do like a 3 to 5 mile run and then immediately jump in gear and do like the McGee or something and feel good afterwards and be like, okay, I could still maintain and keep going. But that's just been doing gear workouts and just being active nonstop. I think last year I only took 4 rest days out of the entire year. And it was funny because the only time I took a rest day was when we traveled back to California to visit family. And I was trying to bring my gear with me to work out on vacation. And my wife was like, no, you're not doing that. Like, you're crazy. And mainly because the gear smells. Yeah. She's like, that smelly gear, you ain't bringing that. And honestly, I've been blessed that the department I am with now, I was working out. We have a primary set and our secondary set. And I was working out in both of them. And after every 3 workouts, I was washing them. And the training captain was like, hey, stop doing that. We'll give you gear. Here's out of service gear. So they gave me two sets that I cycle in and out now, but they definitely allowed me to do that. I'm doing gear workouts on shift. I'll be outside dying in the back, usually by myself, and my BC would drive up and he's like, "How are you doing, Armstrong?" I'm like, "I'm surviving, chief." And he's like, "All right." And then it's just norm though, because I've
Right.
been doing it, for so long now and
Right.
consistently, just trying to stay on that throttle of just, hey, I'm seeing the results of all this work. And man, it's been a blessing. And I'm, like I said, I'm super excited for attending Smoke Divers next month. I'm nervous about it. I don't really know anyone that's going there. So I know it's going to be one of the biggest challenges, but I'm excited for it.
I love hearing your story, and I love the fact that you mentioned, that is the hardest part about gear workout. It's the mentalness. Yeah, and there are going to be times where parts of your body's going to hurt depending on what you're doing. I get it. And then like your mind's telling you why are you doing this? And it's easy for you to be like, all right, I'm tired, I'm done, and you stop. Like, yes, you improved, but the point is to actually like, if you have a set number of reps you want to get to, knowing that you can get there and finishing the task, that's what I think also helps the mind. Because I mean, I don't know one person out there that's going to say like they actually love doing a certain type of gear workout. I mean, it feels good when you're done, but going through it, depending on the weather and depending on if you're up for it or not, your mind's going to be like, bro, what are you doing? And it's like, just stop.
Man, it's those little how can I explain it? Every time I start a gear workout, I always ask myself, what am I doing? Like, why am I out here? Because I'm usually by myself. No one's making me do this. No one's right here suffering with me. Like, you're doing this to yourself. Like, you could stop at any time. I could BS and say, oh yeah, I did 100 whatever. But having that integrity of knowing, I got to do it, because if no one's going to make me do it, I have to do it myself. And it's going to get easier. It's going to get better. Like, there's no other way,
Right.
And in the reasoning behind it is, I'm doing this to be better for that one call out of that one time in my career. If something, heaven forbid, happens, I'm ready, and I know I'm ready because I've done hundreds of exercises and hours in this. That man, when that time comes, I'm going to just be running through wherever, and I have that confidence. And that's the biggest thing, is I don't ever have to worry now about a call of, man, am I physically fit enough? Have I, am I going to be okay in my gear? Man, I've been in my gear so much that I don't even think about it. So it's one less variable to eliminate. And I know Corley Moore talks about eliminating variables all the time. And it's, man, physical fitness is one that you could eliminate. Being in your gear is one you can eliminate. Working on your craft is one you could eliminate. There's so many variables out there, but if we could eliminate them, why not?
No, for sure. For sure. And there's nothing more rewarding than going out there, doing it by yourself. Like, it's different when you're with individuals that are suffering with you, but I'm just going to be real. There are not a lot of people out there that want to do a gear workout. Like, they look at us kind of like, what's the point? That's kind of dumb, whatever the case may be. But when you find yourself out there doing it by yourself and you get done, like you said, you're doing it for that call that will come. It's not a matter of
It's eventually
if,
going to come.
it's eventually going to come, and you will be able to perform or outperform the majority of the guys. And I'm not saying you don't work with people that are physically fit, but there's a difference between an individual that does straight up weightlifting and an individual that does like a little bit of weightlifting, but also working out in your gear. It's the we've heard this saying, the gear's the almighty equalizer. There's nothing like putting it on,
100%.
keeping that heat in, keeping that heat trap, your limited mobility. If you can maneuver and continue doing things in that, then no, when you it's a breeze, honestly.
Yeah, and the only way to get good at it is to do it. And it's not do it once or here and there. It's doing it often, you know. And man, it's you could fake a lot of things in this career field. You cannot fake being ready in that gear. And especially here in Texas, that humidity and heat, man. Oh, those were some of the worst gear workouts I did. And but I always knew, you know, if I could do this by myself with no one pushing me, no one suffering alongside me, if I'm willing to put myself through this and accomplish whatever rep goal or time, or a lot of it's not even time, it's just can I complete this? I know when I'm around others, like, man, it's that mental toughness. And that's, to me, that's how I see it now. I don't see it really as training my body. I see it as just training my mind. What can I do? What can I accomplish? And man, you are so much more capable than you think you are. And every time it's just you're pushing your that level just a little bit more, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. And like I said, doing the stuff that I'm doing now, I couldn't do this a year ago. There's no way in hell. Like the first time I did the McGee, I thought I was gonna die, and it took me like an hour. And now it's like I do that one all the time. You know, I'm not as fast as them by any means. You know, that dude's a monster, a lot of those guys, you know, but I feel like I could do that and then still do a lot of other things, you know, or go for a run, or, you know, it's just that recovery time is so much quicker now.
Definitely. And one of the, I remember seeing a clip, or I've seen a couple, but it seems like not only are you doing it for yourself, but I've seen your son involved in some of your videos watching you. And to me, that's what's most important is the fact that, yes, we're doing it for ourselves, we're doing it for our jobs, but we're also doing it to show our kids like hard work, and these are the results. And it's the fact of what we have chosen for a career path dictates like kids and your family are important. So are the citizens. Like I look at it as your son, you can respond to another child just like your son. You know what I mean? Like in your eyes, that's him. So I always find it funny how, you know, people that do gear workouts are made fun of. But then on the flip side, you have, or at least that I've seen, dads talking to their kids like, well, son or daughter, you know, in order to get better, you need to practice. And it's kind of goes with our job too. In order for us to get better, you have to practice. But instead, we're looking
100%.
at, you know what I mean? We're looking at the guys that are doing these crazy gear workouts. That's just dumb. Like, what happens if we get a call? Okay, you respond to the call and do what we got to do.
It's funny that you say that. My son plays tackle football. He's been playing it for 6 consecutive seasons, and you know, one season my wife bought and told me to be a coach. And like I said, growing up, I never played sports. I was like, the first time I watched football was, you know, when I was in the military and during like Thanksgiving. And I was like, I had no idea. You know, I never paid attention to it, you know, because I didn't grow up around it. But once my son got into it and my wife told me, you know, like, hey, you should be a coach, man, I fell in love with it. You know, I started watching all these videos and seeing how to help these kids out. And here in Texas, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, 100 degrees out there. Those kids are out there in full pads, tackling each other, doing sprints, and working their asses off. And I told myself, like, how can I tell my son, hey, you need to work hard, wear your stuff to do the job that it's just a game for them, and put all the effort into it and get used to it. And the only time, you know, the only way to get good at it is to be in it. And for me not to do that in myself. And I told him, you know, he's working out with my son has been one of the best blessings. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, suffering alongside him, he always tells me, he's like, oh, you know, dad, you're the strongest or you're the fittest. I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm just trying to work as hard as you. But in his eyes, that's what he sees. And man, it makes me feel so good. And, you know, I'm paid to do this job. I'm, you know, like, I can't expect, you know, other people to do this. And you're like I said, like the other kids on this football team, and then not do it myself. And man, like I said, it's been so rewarding to do it and working alongside him and getting better with him, you know. And he sees me struggling and push through things, and he tells me all the time, like, oh, dad, I work hard because you work hard. And I was telling him, no, I work hard because you work hard. I said, by the time you're a teenager and you're my age, I said, like, You're going to outrun me and outdo me in every aspect. I said, because of your work ethic right now. And I'm like, I'm just trying to keep up so I could make it a little more difficult on you when you get older. And he's just, like, he just sees it as just working, alongside dad and dad, doing his best. And that's all I can do.
Right. Okay. Love it. What pushed you or what made you decide to like tackle a smoke diver program?
Just once I saw it, I don't know what it was, but there was just this bug that got put in me of every day I started thinking about it and thinking about, these guys being at that 1% at that level of, pushing themselves to the limit and achieving so much more. And I feel like I'm always trying to prove something to myself. Am I good enough? Am I doing enough work? Am I doing the right things? Am I being a good firefighter? I always deal with those self-doubts or that confidence, am I doing enough? And I saw that as, man, this would be a cool test to see what I'm capable of and see where my, what limits I have, or if I even have those limits, like what's gonna, I see it as like someone that like wants to run a marathon, right? It's like, who wants to run a marathon? Why would you do that? Like, you're not gonna get anything out of it. But finding those things about yourself along the process, and this is just the test at the end, but the journey to accomplish it is the most rewarding thing. And like I said, it's just been that goal that, when I first saw it and met some of those smoke divers and how humble they are and just the way they carry themselves. And I was just like, you know what? Like, that's something I want to do. It looks like a challenge, and I feel like I could do that challenge. I know it ain't gonna be easy, and I have to put in all this work, but guess what? I'm gonna do my best. So,
Awesome. Wish you the best of luck. You said that's in February, right?
yeah, February 23rd is class number five. That's where it starts, and I'll be toeing that line. And like I said, I'm nervous about it, but I'm extremely stoked. So I
Awesome.
feel like I put in a lot of effort, and
I've seen it. Yeah, for
I
sure.
appreciate it.
For sure, man.
At the end of the day, I pray, I've definitely found my faith this past year, tremendously, and just, everything's in his hands. I feel like I've put in the work, and if I pass it, that's all just due to his, grace and allowing me to do it. And guess what? If I don't, there's a lot more I need to work on and get better. So whatever outcome it is, I'm excited for it. So
Okay. All right. I definitely wanted to hit on the physical fitness topic with because, like I said, man, I see you putting in that work. It doesn't go unnoticed, that's for sure. Because
appreciate
I'll
it.
read some of your captions and I'm like, he just ran 6 miles first? Like, son of a bitch. Like, damn. All right.
Like I said, it's just funny because, I'm not the best runner. I'm not the most physically gifted person. Like I feel like there's so much things I struggle with, but the one thing that I would say is just the mental aspect of it. Like right before this, like I said, I did a gear workout and I ran 5 miles, and it's 32 outside, 32 degrees, and it's just like I'm going to do it. Like I have no reason not to, If I'm at work, whatever it is, like I just know I have the capability, and the only thing that stops me is my mind. And man, I could achieve so many things once I get that locked in.
For sure, for sure. I'm assuming you're definitely an advocate for outside training. I always like to ask the guests too, because I'm trying to get this point like across the board. How important do you think outside training is?
Extremely. Like I said, I'm not a smart guy by any means. So the more I could do things outside and get my hands on things and go through the motions of it, the more confident I feel. It's you have to be out there, putting on the gear and just going through the movements of throwing a ladder or moving a hose, because you could talk about things all day long, but if you're not out there actually doing it and feeling that stress of it or those limitations, when that call does happen, at least, like, even getting out of the engine, our air packs, when you sit back, they lock in. You know, if you jump out too quickly, or you know, if you're too excited, it's going to stop you and
Yeah, it
lock
won't
you
come
in.
out, right.
Or just putting on your seatbelt, going through the motions of taking that off so you don't get caught on anything. You know, masking up, all those things, like you have to do it. And getting outside, knowing your district, driving around, seeing things. Like I said, this town that we're in right now, or you know, the city, it's growing so fast, and buildings are getting put up so quickly. And you know, it's all that lightweight wood construction, you know, and it's you getting out there and seeing all that it's important. You need to know.
And it doesn't hurt either that Texas, with all the different cadres out there, all the different conferences, man, you can choose, like, you have so much at your disposal within Texas for sure.
100%. And I know that's something that I need to work on more, is doing a lot more conferences and get out. And that's why, you know, when you reach out to me and ask me, you know, about doing this, I'm like, I'm no one from nowhere. You know, I feel like I'm just kind of in my little bubble, you know, just working out and doing gear workouts, getting prepared. But, you know, I'm not really going out there with like a lot of the guys, like, you know, Kevin Pfluger, Tom Holleck, who going out there and teaching all these classes. You know, that's why I was like, why are you asking me? You know, and it was just kind of funny. But I feel like the fire service, it's there's so many benefits, but there's also a downfall where if you get too involved with it, which I was starting to do, and attending conferences, and you start losing sight on the real, you know, real reasons of why we do this. And for me, it's my family. And I felt like when I first got DOD and going city, you know, with Live Oak, I was 100% full in, trying to do classes and trying to do trainings. But then I started forgetting about my family at home and putting them aside. And honestly, you know, one day I had a rude awakening with my wife telling me, like, hey, you know, you keep putting a second, you ain't gonna come home to a family. And man, that was a kick in the, man, like no other. And it changed my, you know, my perspective on everything. I completely, like, man, when I'm at home now. Like, I'm grateful that my kids are in school and my wife's at work, that I could do this training and focus on that. But as soon as that's, you know, they're home, I don't talk about anything really in fire service. I focus on them. Like I said, I help coach my son's football. He's in jiu-jitsu right now, but I go to every class, you know, and I feel like I'm always battling that, because there is all these conferences and all these great guys teaching, and I'm like, man, I want to do that, but you know, my kids got this going on right now, and but that's my priority, and so it definitely is a constant battle. But at the end of the day, you know, when I leave the fire service, my family's going to be there, and I have to remember that. And like I said, for a time there, I wasn't, and man, that's a fault of my own. And I'm thankful that my wife, you know, she's a strong woman, and she was like, hey, you know, you need to wake up, you know, you need to realize what you're doing. And it's so easy for us not to, you know, it's, man, you get around brothers that are hard hitters and wanting to go after and, you know, do everything they can and more, and it's easy to be consumed by that. But
Absolutely.
it's definitely a double-sided blade. You know,
Yeah,
you have to
man.
be aware of how much, you know, it's that scale. You put too much on one side, the other one's gonna lose out. So you have to be mindful of it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's a delicate balance, 'cause I mean, trust me, there's so many conferences I want to attend, but it's like, especially nowadays with how expensive everything is, it's like you got to find that balance, man. Like, I'd love to go to this, but I, you know what I mean? I just came back from this one, or I have this one planned in the future, so it's like I gotta pick and choose, you know? And sometimes it's okay to say no. You have to, because like you mentioned, I've stated this in very different episodes that I've had before you. When you lose sight of what's important, at you're lucky that she gave you that warning. There are a lot of them. Sometimes it's just like, you know what? I'm out. That's it. And you come back and ain't no one there. And you're like, what happened? It's easy to lose sight on something we love because we want to get good at it. But like you said, man, family is important.
It's definitely, like I said, this past year, just trying to really focus on, my faith, my family, my friends, my fitness, and then the fire. All those things are extremely important, but I have to put them in those, priorities. It's like I said, we love the fire service. This is why we joined this. We want to help people. We want to do the best. We want to give, everything we can to it. But at the same time, you have to give it to your family, because at the end of the day, if your home life and your family life isn't good, well, guess what? It's going to affect your fire life. You have to work on both of them. And
For sure.
like, to me, we always say, family first. And it's easy to say it and not do it, though. You really have to do it and be there for them. And growing up, my real dad wasn't in my life, and I had my stepdad around, but he was there physically but not mentally. Like, he wasn't there as, a father figure. And I always questioned myself, like, why me? Why didn't I have, a good father growing up and things like that? And now, being a father, I realize, well, now I have the opportunity to be the best dad I can be because of everything I went through. And I have the job that allows me to have that time off to focus on them. We get that time off to do that. And so it, yeah, like I said, that was all because I had that wake up call, though. It didn't come over, it
Yeah,
didn't come easy.
for sure. Okay. Love the message. Last question for you. Where would you like to see yourself end up before you decide to retire? Like, it doesn't matter rank, department, but like, what are your goals before you decide to hang it up?
Man, for me, I wish to do this job as long as I possibly can, as long as my body can keep up, whatever position it is. To me, it doesn't really matter. As long as I'm helping people and affecting those around me. I hear, people talk about all the time, your position and your rank doesn't matter. You could lead people wherever it is. So as long as I'm able to do that and make an impact in people's life and making my family happy and being there for them, I just want to enjoy this ride. Like I said, growing up, like, this was never something I thought I would ever do. So I'm just grateful to do it every single day. That's, man, going to work, I'm excited and I'm happy because I don't take it for granted, because I always tell myself, man, I shouldn't be here right now. I shouldn't be doing this. Like, but I am, and I'm able to, and I hope to, promote up and go through the ranks, but I'm not in any rush. I want to enjoy what I can. And like I said, I've been going on 15 years and I'm still feeling like I'm trying to be a good firefighter. I still feel like I'm a rookie in so many different aspects. Like, I'm not stressed about trying to, promote and try and make a rank. What I'm stressed about is trying to be the best, I could be the best husband I could be, the best son I could be, the best father I could be. That's what I worry about. So life has taken me to, here, and man, it's been a blessing. So
Fantastic. Love the answer, pal. It's your answer, and then it's for you and you alone to understand, and I love it. Like, you're in no rush to promote. Even if you it seems like even if you stay a backstep your entire career, you want to be the best damn backstep that you can be. And there are people that need to be in those roles. There are people that need to be in officer roles, engineer roles, chief roles, whatever the case. But this whole conversation is why I wanted you on here, man. Humbleness, you're real, you're open. You have that why me, but I want people to understand and hear different versions of different people's stories as to why they signed up to do this job. So I just want to say first and foremost, thank you for accepting the invite. I'm sure you were a little nervous at first, but like I just like having honest conversations with people to get that message out. Like, it's okay to love the job. We need to love the job, but we got to have priorities in line. But we also got to remember Just because we signed up to do this job doesn't mean we can lack in other aspects such as training and physical fitness. And bro, you get after it all the damn time.
I
That's,
appreciate it.
you know, some people might say it's extreme, but what we do is not easy. You know, it may seem easy to those who've done this job for so long, but putting on that gear when it's hot, you know, there's a big difference between putting it on when it's cold and when it's hot. When it's hot, game changer.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah.
People are dropping out like flies.
Man, that humidity is, oh, it is horrible when it does kick in. And, you know, like I said, I don't have an excuse not to do it. You know, at the end of the day, there is no excuse not to be a professional and being ready in your gear and ready to respond. And I feel like, you know, it's just, I don't know how to explain it to people. You know, I've had rookies come and I'm like, hey, you want to do a gear workout with me? You know, no, you don't need to match my time. You don't need to match my reps. Do you just want to get in gear and get used to it? And there, you know, a lot of the responses is like, oh, well, you know, what if we get a call and I don't want to be sweaty, or, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's difficult. I'm like, well, yeah, of course it's difficult, but you got to get better at it. And the only way to get better is to get in it. And I tell him too, because I had one rookie, he was, I was on the engine and he was on the ambulance. And he's like, oh, well, what if we get a medical call? You know, I'm in gear and I have to dress down real quick and I'm going to be delayed. I said, yeah, you know, but there's, what if the lieutenant comes out and says, hey, put on your full gear and let's go throw ladders? You're going to be, no hesitation. Yes, sir. Let me go do it and get it done. I was like, what's the difference? Because what if you get a medical call and have to dress down and get in that box and go? I said, one, you're all for, and the other one, you're like, ah, no, I'm trying to make excuses. I'm like, to me, it doesn't make sense. I said, yeah, you know, I said it's like a workout, but it's training. You're training in your gear, you're getting used to it. I was like, you're doing movements, you know, that if we go on the fire ground, you're going to be doing, you need to pick things up, you need to do farmer carries, you need to do all this in your gear. Like, don't you want to get better at it? And I've had guys do gear workouts with me and then never do a gear workout again. And a lot of it is, you know, we're naturally competitive. You know, you see someone do something, you're like, oh, I'm going to match them and try to do that. But if guys aren't ready for it or used to it, it's humbling. It is extremely humbling. And I've had, you know, for me, when I first did it, I was like, I need to get better at this. But a lot of other guys is, man, this sucked. I don't ever want to do this again, you know, and it turns them off. And I don't ever want people to get turned off on it. It's like, hey, you see, it's hard, it's difficult. Well, guess what? Start getting in a little bit more. You know, you don't have to jump in the deep end. It's like that crawl, walk, run. You know, you could take this slowly, but you have to do, you know, the work. The work isn't going to get done by, you know, you just being afraid of it or making excuses. Like, you have to do the work. And like I said earlier, you can't fake being ready and fit in gear. There's no
Facts.
way around it. It's gonna eat you alive. You know, you could do, you know, bodybuilding and, you know, CrossFit workouts all day long, but putting that on, oh, it's so much more different.
Yeah, that's facts. That's big facts, man. I love it. I love it because it's true. You know, it's like there is no difference. The only difference would be you telling them as a firefighter, whereas an officer telling them as the officer. But other than that, it's the same thing. I've ran a couple medical calls where I've had to dress down and I'm sweating profusely in this person's house and they're looking at me like, "You good?" Yeah, and I just tell them, "I just got done doing a gear workout for you, so I'm fine." And they kind of look at me like, "Oh, okay." If you kind of spin it like I'm sweating like this because of you, because I'm getting myself prepared, they're not going to complain. It's well, damn, look at this fireman. While the others are nice, bone and dry, and they're probably looking around like, how come all of you aren't sweaty? But anyways, that's
Yeah,
different.
it is embarrassing sometimes where like we had a difficulty breathing and like I felt like I was more out of breath than the person that we're responding to. And they're like, you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Like, how can I help you? Or, you know, or doing like a cardiac arrest and doing compressions and you're sweating on the person, you
Sweating on
know.
the hey, it happens, man. They're just sweating on
It
the person.
happens,
It is what it
you
is,
know,
bro.
but you know, I still have the capability to do that, you know. Get dressed down real quick and in that time of responding, calming my heart rate down and recovering. And okay, let's get after it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Josh, like I said, this has been an awesome episode, man. I love the
I appreciate it.
conversation. I appreciate you accepting the invite, pal.
Thank you, man.
I
Like I
think
said,
others. others that are listening to this would be like, bro, you did great, man. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Like I said, man, it's definitely an honor. I hear your podcast all the time and who you have on here, and it's hard not to compare yourself to others. Like, man, these guys are out there killing it and teaching these classes, or have this, man, so much experience. And like, I do get workouts, and I work out with my son, and I just do what I
Hey,
can.
all
You
of
know
it
what I mean? Like,
matters. It
it's hard.
matters. It all matters, man.
So I appreciate you, tremendously.
Yes,
And
sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate
honestly,
you.
yeah. And I appreciate everyone that I've been able to work with. And like I said, I'm just a product of good experiences and good people being around me. This is not me. I didn't think, oh yeah, I'm gonna just start doing this. I had nothing. I had guys out there showing me and doing gear workouts with me and just kind of inspiring me and seeing people out there doing the work. It's like I said, it I've just been grateful, man. This job is definitely an amazing job, and I love it to death.
And like I said, that right there, this is why this has happened, man. So I appreciate you, bro.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.